Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins.
I now declare the 48th Democratic National Convention to be adjourned. But I promise, we the people are just getting started.
The first half of this season of virtual political conventions is over. Democrats and some Republicans spent the past week making their case why President Trump should be turned out of office in 71 days.
May history be able to say that the end of this chapter of American darkness began here tonight as love and hope and light join in the battle for the soul of the nation.
Now it's time for the Republican rebuttal. Vice President Pence on Friday previewed what we'll be hearing over the next few days.
The choice here is between a president who's rebuilt our military, revived our economy, stood by all our liberties, stood for law and order, and Joe Biden and the Democratic Party that have been overtaken by the radical left.
But months of polling have shown that voters may be not buying it. Joe Biden has even turned reliably Republican states into toss-ups. Earlier this summer, 538 described the president's position as the toughest for an incumbent since Jimmy Carter in 1980. Will the coming week turn things around for the president, as well as the down-ballot Republicans whose own re-elections are riding on the president's? First, Republicans must officially renominate the Trump-Pence ticket, and that's exactly what 336 delegates are doing beginning this hour at the Charlotte Convention Center. In fact, the roll call will be at 11:30, and you'll hear it here on WFAE. That meeting is the climax of a fraught two-year relationship between the city and this convention.
The city will make moves to host the next Republican National Convention in 2020.
There are going to be other communities, other cities applying, and I don't know who they are, but we will hopefully compete very well.
Documents that suggest that Charlotte is already a finalist.
The estimated $200 million economic impact.
Regardless of what your politics are, it's going to be good for the city.
A major decision for Charlotte. The city council just voted to host the 2020 RNC.
Hours of debate and protest from...
We do not want the Trump train and its garbage in our city.
I encourage you to vote to showcase Charlotte.
Charlotte, North Carolina will be the site.
That was the crowd chanting, "Send her back." And it came after the president criticized Representative Ilhan Omar.
As the council passed a resolution condemning the president's recent language, multiple residents also called on the city council to consider revoking the RNC's invitation.
I don't believe that you're going to be able to walk away from this contract.
The 2020 presidential campaign has fundamentally changed amid the coronavirus pandemic.
Somebody was asking today, will you cancel the convention? I said, no way I'm going to cancel the convention. We're not going to cancel. It's going to be incredible.
News, major developments in the efforts to stop the spread of COVID-19.
An executive order now bans gatherings of more than 100 people.
If the Democratic governor of North Carolina cannot assure that he will allow a full arena, the president says Republicans will be forced to find another venue.
It is official tonight. The Republican National Convention is coming to Florida. While most of the routine business will stay in North Carolina, the big event, President Trump's official nomination, will happen in Jacksonville.
The host committee says that, quote, we need to stop pretending there's any part of the convention that will remain in Charlotte.
I'm still kind of a little bit in shock that there was a decision to move it away.
To have a big convention, it's not the right time. So I told my team it's time to cancel the Jacksonville, Florida component of the GOP convention. We'll be starting in North Carolina, and they'll be doing the nomination.
While the convention won't be what it was once planned to be, delegates are still excited for what lies ahead.
I think having at least 336 of us together is better than zero.
Once the renomination is squared away today, Republicans turn their attention to making the argument for a second Trump turn. And here to talk about all of that is Dan Berry, the former chairman of the Union County Republican Party, who currently leads the Hornet's Nest Republican Men's Club. Thanks for being here during your convention, by the way. We appreciate you taking the time out to be with us during your convention. Thank you for being
here. Thank you, Mike.
And Matt Moore is former chairman of the South Carolina Republican Party. He's managing partner at First Tuesday Strategies. That's a political campaign and PR strategy firm based in Columbia. Thank you for being with us too, Matt. Appreciate it.
Good to be here.
We had planned to have District 7 Charlotte City Councilman Ed Driggs, a Republican, on the program, but he is an alternate delegate to the convention and was called late last night. He's at the convention center. Perhaps he's now becoming a delegate. He'll try to join us before the hour is over. Let me start with you, Dan, since you are how many generations, Charlottean?
Eighth
generation. So we've talked in the past about the political, at least Ed and I talked in the past about the political undercurrent in Charlotte about holding this convention here. But on this opening day, should Charlotteans be disappointed or should they be relieved that this convention will be mostly virtual?
I think we're all disappointed. And I know the partisan side of me is disappointed because we were very, very excited about the pomp and circumstances and having that here in Charlotte. But as a broader community, we lost an opportunity to put Charlotte on the worldwide stage and have a $200 million plus economic impact. And it is our small business owners and hospitality and service industry folks that are really paying the most significant price in the middle of this economic pain that we're having as a result of COVID.
And Ed Driggs is with us now, obviously by phone, walking through the convention center. Ed, good morning. Thank you for joining us.
Morning, Dan.
Dan is here, and so is Matt Moore from the South Carolina Republican Party. And we're on the air, by the way, Ed. From what you could tell last week at the Democratic National Convention, what you know of your plans for your convention, Ed, can this new format, this virtual format, be as compelling as an arena-based convention?
Well, certainly it lacks a lot of the intensity. And of course, the large numbers of people, the media presence that we expected to have. As you may know, the Republicans decided not to adopt a platform at this convention. So it's mainly about just nominating the president and a whole bunch of speeches, most of which will be virtual.
I heard a North Carolina congresswoman talking about voters comparing the Republican platform with the Democratic platform, and that would lay out everything they need to know about both parties. But you're telling me that the platform that the Republicans have is the one from 4 years ago or no platform at all, Ed?
Well, on June 10th, the Republican Executive Committee decided to just roll forward the 2016 platform. So that was the status then. But the latest was that they had decided that they were just going to go with a three-paragraph statement in lieu of a platform. So I think you need to refer to the 2016 platform to know what the party is about. But there may have been people who objected to adopting that this year because there were a lot of references to the prior administration, the Obama administration. So in some respects, it was clearly out of date. So you may have seen the short form that they adopted for this one, okay. But it's three sentences.
Matt Moore is with us from South Carolina. The run-up to this convention, this Republican convention, Matt, has probably been the most unusual in the history of political conventions, because first it was here, then it was in Jacksonville, now it's here, but not really here. It's only one day here. Then it goes virtual for the rest of the week, and there are a lot of moving parts. The Democrats seemed to settle very quickly on what they were going to do, and they didn't jerk Milwaukee around very much. The Republicans had a problem with that, which we just talked about. Is that, you're a strategist, is that basically... was the chaos basically caused by the president and or by those trying to please the president?
I'm not sure I would call it chaos. I think it's a benefit to go second in this process, right, and adjust, the messaging and the formatting. I think the criticism of the Democratic convention was that it was a bit cold, a bit impersonal, did the best they could, over Zoom and sort of similar types of formats. But I expect the Republican convention this week to be a bit more warm. You'll see more people in the audience. For example, I know that the president's invited all the delegates who were in Charlotte today, for example, to the White House on Thursday night to potentially see his nominating or renominating speech. So I think you'll see a bit more of a personal touch, or an attempt to make a more personal touch with this week's Republican convention than you might have seen last week. Now, there are some risks with that, right? Much of the country is still suffering under the effects of this pandemic. So it's, maybe it's a bit of a double-edged sword, but I think with the right precautions, Republicans are looking at a potentially a good balance coming out of convention.
Ed, you were pointing at me. Did you want to jump in here?
Yeah, I just wanted to comment on the fact this is a reflection of the difference in the attitudes of the parties towards how we respond to the pandemic and what kind of a shutdown we're prepared to tolerate. So the Republicans have always been more aggressive about trying to open the economy, wanting people to get back to their lives safely. And the Democrats have this shut it down mindset. So I think you can see that difference reflected. Yes, there were conversations or exchanges between the president and the governor, but at the end of the day, the virus dictated what was possible, and we're doing as much as we can under these circumstances, safely.
So a lot of pundits viewed last week's convention, the Democratic convention, and gave it pretty good reviews under the circumstances and saw it as revelatory of maybe conventions in the future, that we may never go back to arenas, and that this, particularly the roll call, got rave reviews from most people that I saw because of the way it was handled. You know, political conventions have been TV shows for years. This was just a different kind of TV show. And Dan, I don't know if you can answer this question, but your convention is being produced by two former people associated with The Apprentice, which was a big TV show. How do you think your convention will look different from the Democrats?
Matt made a great point that there is an advantage in going second. So, you know,
but you can only you can only change so much in the course of 1 week when you're talking about a production of this size.
So there was a fantastic article in Politico. I read it this morning. I don't know when it came out that talked about this issue and political conventions. And I think if we are intellectually honest about political conventions, they are giant pep rallies for their candidate and their brand, and they are made for TV. Now, you and Ed and I are old enough to remember when they went live at 8 and they didn't stop till 12:30, and it was every network all week long. Now we're down to an hour, hour and a half, 3 days. Right. I think what we're seeing as a result of COVID is maybe more of the made for TV launch of these political campaigns. And, you know, to the Republicans' credit, they brought in some professional folks to do that.
Last week's Democratic convention, Ed, averaged about 21.6 million viewers a night. That's down a little bit from 2016. But MSNBC had the highest rated primetime week in its 24-year history, ahead of every single network on television every single night. And Fox recorded its lowest average viewership in the 10 p.m. hour since the start of the year. We will see a flip of that this week, no doubt. But if Fox's numbers don't match MSNBC's, does that say anything about President Trump's chances for re-election, Ed?
I don't think it reflects anything like that. I think there is much more clarity about what the president stands for. And he has been in office for 4 years. The Democrats are still trying to identify themselves. And I think a lot of people were watching to try to find out what they could expect. And frankly, I think they were disappointed.
Okay. Ed, I know you're walking around the convention center. I'm wondering if you can stay with us much longer. Can you stay with us?
I'll hang here. Yeah.
Okay. Ed Driggs is with us. He is a Charlotte City Council District 7 and an alternate delegate to the Republican National Convention, which starts right now. It's underway right now. Dan Barry is here from Union County, and Matt Moore is here from South Carolina, all GOP folks. And we'll continue our conversation in a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Fifth Third Bank, dedicated to the financial empowerment of the community by investing time, resources, and people in the Charlotte area and throughout the state. More at 53.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the Republican National Convention, which gets is underway right now at the Charlotte Convention Center. It began at 9 o'clock this morning. Ed Driggs is here, Charlotte City Council District 7, an alternate delegate to that convention who was called to be there this morning. So are you officially, Ed, filling in for somebody? Can you hear me, Ed?
Yes, I can. I wouldn't say I was filling in for somebody. We received invitations and I accepted mine.
Okay. Dan Barry is also with us, former chairman of the Union County GOP, leader of the Hornets Nest Republican Men's Club. And Matt Moore is here, former chairman of the South Carolina GOP and a managing partner in a political campaign strategy firm. Ed, let's talk about how this will work. It got underway at 9 o'clock this morning. The roll call is at 11:30. There's no platform to talk about. So what exactly is happening between now and 11:30 this morning?
Well, the delegates are gathered here in the hall. I don't see any specific events scheduled before that. So I think we're here until that roll call starts. The nomination is the main event. I believe the president is expected to put in an appearance. So we're standing by. That's why I'm able to talk to you now here.
So, Dan, the Republican Party had no presidential primaries this time around. Does that mean that every single delegate will be casting their votes for the president when the roll call comes around, or do you anticipate a surprise bogus candidate every once in a while?
No surprises, Mike.
The president is supposed to be here. We know that Vice President Pence, it was announced that he would be here, but now we're being told that the president will appear at every single day of this convention, and he's scheduled to make an appearance today. How unusual is that, Matt, for that to happen?
Well, the president leaves D.C. this morning around 10 a.m., flies into Charlotte, then over to the Asheville area, and back to D.C. tonight. So he's actually appearing in state today physically, but I think appearing from the White House or nearby tonight in the 10 o'clock hour. It's a bit unprecedented. You know, the president usually shows up in some shots of the crowd, you know, during the convention. This is an unconventional president, right? He probably gets the theatrical nature of conventions better than any president in history. This convention is, to some degree, to the Republicans, about mobilizing the base. You know, traditionally conventions are about the pivot back to the center, the appeal to moderates and undecided voters. There are very few undecided voters in this election, and this is a base election. The president recognizes that. That's really the main contrast, I think, between this convention and the convention last week, the Democrats. Is that this convention this week in Charlotte and virtually will be a much more direct appeal to the party's base than maybe you saw last week in an attempt to appeal to the center.
Because he is a showman, the president, one of the things that he really wanted to achieve in this convention was the optics of unity and the fact that he is the guy who's brought us through the greatest economy the world has ever known, and COVID-19 got in the way of that. And he moved it to Jacksonville in part because he wanted to have the traditional arena-style convention. What he's ended up with, at least in this roll call, which will be televised at 11:30, is a bunch of people sitting in about 360 people socially distanced in a ballroom wearing face masks, which is exactly the optics he was trying to avoid. Will that help or hurt him, Matt? You're a strategist.
Well, you know, I think ultimately the election this fall is a referendum on the administration's response to the pandemic. I think, you know, if the president can cut through the media clutter, there are some positive stories to tell. And that ultimately getting the economy back on track means getting the virus fixed first, right? And I think the administration is focused with laser-like precision on that, at least recently. And so it's just a reflection of the times. Yeah, I think ideally there'd be a convention in Jacksonville or Charlotte or anywhere they would have had us to do it in person. Some sober reality, I think doesn't hurt to recognize where we are in this battle and to prepare the American people for the path forward. I expect to see some of that this week.
Matt just made the argument the Democrats were making last week, Dan, about the COVID-19 mm-hmm. pandemic, that the president, well, they were saying that the president had no plan, and without a plan, you can't defeat the virus. And if you don't defeat the virus, you can't reopen the economy. How do you respond to that?
There's a lot in there, Mike, and I'm not a biologist or a microbiologist or a virus specialist, so I'll tell you what people tell me.
Okay.
And that is that we're in the risk business. I'm in the risk business, and you do the very best you can to mitigate risk. We had the Spanish flu. We've had plenty of viruses that created harm but we've never been put in a situation where the government actually shut down segments of our economy. And we start to look at like Mecklenburg County. You and I didn't have a chance to talk about this before, but in North Carolina, it just depends that we, you know, the thought process is the governor's flipping a coin and figuring out why some bars are open and some restaurants are closed. It just can't figure it out. When we start to talk about COVID, it was very clear that COVID was managing us when we go back to March. Today, I have a much better sense that elected leaders, both parties, whether we're talking about the Democratic governor of North Carolina or the president, are beginning to get a handle on our pathway forward. And we got a long way to go, figure out how to mitigate risk and get back to work.
Well, the Democrats would say, Matt, that they had a playbook for that, and that the playbook was ignored for pandemics. And it was a Republican president, Ronald Reagan, who famously asked, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? And that one statement may be what led him to be elected. If you ask that question today, what would voters say?
Well, I think that Republicans would say that the president helped create an economy that was humming, can do it again. I compare that with the kinds of proposals that the Democrats are putting forward, higher taxes, more regulation, and that the potential to be better off is much greater under Republican administration in the future. I'm sure that, those on both sides will want to litigate what's happened over the past 6 months. I think that the smart, pragmatic way to see it, if you're the Republican Party, is to put forth a path forward, which Dan mentioned some of that, and show the clear contrast with what will happen if Biden and Harris are elected. I think there are some historical comparisons.
Well, you're not the only person who has said that. The Republican, if you watch the TV commercials for the president's reelection, they are warning about what will happen under a Biden-Harris administration. The world wasn't so bad under the Obama administration economically once we got out of the doldrums of the Great Recession. So how can you make that case?
Well, I think it comes down to the fundamental differences, the way the parties see the American economy and see the role of states. You know, there was a lot of criticism of the way that the Trump administration allowed states to be those laboratories of democracy, as Justice Brandeis famously said, in attacking the coronavirus pandemic or trying to get the economy back on track, seeing what works. We're in an unknown period. But, I think what the president would say, he's going to say this week, is that, look, I understand fundamentally the economy better than the Democrats. Look at what the Democratic Party wants to do. Those around Biden want to do. He might be a nice guy or might be a nice Uncle Joe, but the fact is that the Democratic Party is led by the left flank now, and they want to raise taxes, increase regulation, and do the kinds of things that don't lead to sustained economic growth. So I expect you'll see that from the president this week and his team.
The president has been railing, Dan, against mail-in voting. He said it leads to voter fraud, and yet he and the First Lady just voted in Florida by voting by mail. He's warned that this election will be rigged. He said the only way we're going to lose this election is if the election is rigged, and he's refused to say whether he would accept the results of the election, which is exactly what he said 4 years ago, but he wasn't the president 4 years ago. Republicans are conservative by definition. So how do you defend the president's undermining of one of the key institutions of our democracy by calling into question the integrity of our election?
I love coming on with you, Mike, but I think there's more to that than kind of this 30,000 foot view. So let's back up for a second. Not all Republicans are conservative. Not all Democrats are socialist. So that, some great speeches back from the 50s about being a conservative Southern Democrat or a liberal Republican from the Northeast, those still exist. There's a huge difference, to your point, on vote by mail and absentee voting.
There is no difference.
There's absolutely a difference. The Colorado difference, and I'll use them as an example, every registered voter gets a ballot. In North Carolina, you have to request a ballot.
Okay.
There's a huge, and here's why that's so important.
Well, there are differences state to state in how people vote in person.
So let me finish, please.
Okay.
So voter rolls are known for their inaccuracies. So when you pump a lot of ballots out into the public, what happens to them? And they land in mailboxes for old addresses, and individuals that aren't registered to vote now have a legal ballot in their control, or that get stolen out of mailboxes, less likely, but then are executed. And there's no way, because, you know, we don't track that stuff. There's no way to pay attention to it. The question as to the president's accepting the validity of the election is, and I'll say this because I'm on the record for saying it, sometimes I wish his controllers would rip his phone out of his hand and keep us off Twitter. Because at the end of the day, there will be an outcome. It may be Christmas before we know the outcome, but we will have a victor, and the Electoral College will ultimately meet and select the president.
But that didn't answer my question, so I'll ask it to Ed. Does it concern you, does it bother you that the president of the United States would be sowing seeds of distrust in our electoral system?
I think Ronna McDaniel explained it pretty well on Face the Nation when she said that states that have established practices for mail-in voting are more reliable. The big concern was the states that are scrambling in 90 days to create a mechanism for this, and all of the problems that could be associated with that. So clearly there's an element of presidential rhetoric here, and we need to wait and see what actually happens. But as Dan pointed out, there are differences from state to state in what it means to go to an all mail-in format.
But mail-in voting aside, you used the term presidential rhetoric. Should the president's rhetoric include a phrase like the only way we're going to lose is if the election is rigged, indicating that if he loses, it was rigged?
I think there are many things the president has said that people have learned to interpret or discount. So we need to stay focused on the actual facts. I mean, you were asking about the economy before. Before the virus, the economy was at an all-time high. Unemployment was at an all-time low. Employment was at a high. And that is the president's track record on the economy. I think things like that are going to be more important than some of his less controlled utterances.
But if we focus on actual facts, we can't take the president at his word, because he doesn't like facts, Matt.
Well, this president's put together the most unique political coalition I think anyone's seen, certainly in modern history, right? So the question is, how do you keep it together? He certainly is a master showman, and you'll see that this week. But yeah, I'd argue that the president's supporters like the rhetoric. As I said earlier, that these elections are all about keeping the base of agenda up, tuned in, fired up. I think it's clear that the Republican Party base is pretty fired up for this president and this administration. We'll see what happens in November. I think polls do show the president may be trailing a bit, but he sort of relishes the opportunity to be down and maybe compared to 2016, sort of enjoyed it, right? And there are historical comparisons still for president being down with the president. As you look back to 88 with the way that George H.W. Bush trailed to caucus and came back, right? So we're a long way from Election Day.
He is an unconventional president. He was an unconventional candidate, which I think attracted a lot of people to him, which accounts for why he is the president right now. But the unconventional nature of the president also includes things that are unattractive in a president and worrisome in a president. I have to ask, because both of you, Dan and Matt and Ed, you're all three longtime Republicans. Is the Republican Party, as it stands today, the Republican Party you joined and were attracted to in your youth? I'll start with you, Dan.
Components of it are that... I'm going to answer the question. I answered it last time. I'll answer it this time. Parts of it are and parts of it aren't. Parties ebb. Wrote last week in my blog, parties ebb and flow with the times. And the Republican Party has moved ideologically to become a conservative populist party from what you and I would know as the party of Alec McMillan and Jim Martin in North Carolina. At the same time, we've watched the Democratic Party make a hard left turn and is not the party of Jim Hunt anymore. It's far more liberal. So it's just, it's an interesting dynamic for those of us who watch trends like this. I think it'll move back.
Matt. I think we just lost Matt. We'll try to get Matt back. His picture disappeared off my Zoom screen, so I think we've lost him. Ed, the party, I'm told, is intending to present itself during this convention entirely in Trump's image. What is that image?
Mike, I wanted to answer your other question because okay. I thought you were going to go around. I consider myself to be something of a Reagan Republican. So my values in being a Republican are the traditional values of self-reliance, small government, fiscal responsibility. I think my conduct in public office has made it clear that I am not in accord with the president in terms of how he communicates and issues like that. But I think all of this is a product of the polarization of our political life. It has just gotten so ugly. And I think the reason somebody like President Trump could get elected is a backlash against what a lot of people consider to be excesses of progressive. So what was your other question, Mike?
The party is intending, we are told, to project itself during this convention in Trump's own image. And I asked you what that image is.
I think he's established himself as combative. He's a guy who's prepared to step up and fight in the face of all kinds of pressures from the media on academic campuses and other places to conform to a certain worldview. And there are people who appreciate that. So I think that's what they're buying into. There are a lot of Republicans who will probably vote for Trump that aren't too happy about some of his conduct. But there are fundamentals here that will decide how people vote.
Ed Driggs is a city councilman, a Republican city councilman here in Charlotte, an alternate delegate to the Republican National Convention, where he is speaking to us right now. Dan Barry, former chairman of the Union County GOP, and Matt Moore is former chairman of the South Carolina GOP. When we come back, we'll talk more about the president, about the Republican convention, which starts today, and about Republicans against Trump. You guys have stuck with him. Others have not. We'll find out what that means when we come back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the Republican National Convention and the week ahead, which began this morning at 9 at the Charlotte Convention Center. The roll call at 11:30 will be carried live here. Ed Driggs is with us. He's at the Convention Center as an alternate delegate. Dan Barry is a former chairman of the Union County GOP, and Matt Moore is former chairman of the South Carolina GOP and a managing partner in First Tuesday Strategies. Matt, the president's approval ratings have never crested above 50%. Which is historic. At the moment, his aggregate approval ratings hover around 41.8% with a 54.1% disapproval rating. When he speaks, when he tweets, when he is on the stump as a campaigner, he seems to only want to address his base. I think one of you or all three of you have said that this convention is designed to appeal to that base. With numbers like those, how do you win without bringing other people into the fold?
Well, he won in 2016. Hillary Clinton was a historically unliked, I guess, presidential candidate. Certainly, the president does remain within striking distance where he needs to win most, which is the Midwest, right? So the states like Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, those kinds of places. And back to the question earlier, I apologize, my internet is spotty. You know, the president put together a unique political coalition, right, that's built on unorthodox Republican issues. I think what Republican voters figured out is that the promises they were made over the past 20 years on things like free trade, on the economy didn't pan out. And so they turned on the so-called Republican establishment. That's the big lesson that was learned in the 2016 election cycle, is that the Republican Party's old playbook of free trade, sort of unfettered, the global alliances had not benefited the middle class. And so I think if the president focuses on how his policies will help the middle class, help the the people who need it most, he could find success still in this election, and he's still in within striking distance in those key states.
But the middle class continues to disappear. The middle class isn't being helped. The people with money are being helped, but not the middle class who is struggling. Yet, even before the pandemic, the president promised to build a wall. The wall has not been built. The president promised infrastructure projects, none of which have materialized. The president said you'll get tired of winning. I don't think people are tired of winning right now. So how do you run against yourself? How do you run with that record? Dan.
Is that a question? Dan, okay.
I'll throw it to somebody else.
We love virtual, Mike. I didn't know who you were asking that. I think you talk about the employment story and the economy pre-COVID, and that we will get that back. You know, the lowest black unemployment, the lowest Hispanic unemployment, record markets, record economic growth, record employment. It's a huge opportunity. When I have phone calls, we all get, you know, our problem for us is we're in the echo chamber. When you kind of breach out of that, I have colleagues and folks that I met that voted for Hillary Clinton that said, I'm voting for Trump this time because I want that back. I want back what I had in December. I want my businesses functioning. So the story for the Republicans, as Matt talked about, is re-engaging with our base and driving them. Is also reminding them of how good it can be, not how bad it is. And the Democrats' campaign is, here's how bad it is, and we're not that guy.
But right now, it's bad. It's never been this bad in the history of the country with all this unemployment, et cetera. And Philip emails, Republicans in the House mostly voted against the HEROES Act, which would have extended unemployment benefits and much additional help. Mitch McConnell refuses to even bring the HEROES Act to a vote. Talk is cheap. The actions of Republicans speak much louder than their words. Ed, what do you say to that?
So, Mike, I think the discussion in Washington about continuing CARES type of funding is just that you have to have one eye on our national debt situation, and you can't kind of completely trade away the future in the short term. So I believe that there are concerns about the design of the program that caused disputes between the parties. Paying $600 a week to everybody was a major disincentive for people to go back to work. So there were problems about the initial steps that were taken, and I think we've gotten stuck in terms of deciding where to go from there.
Several Republicans appeared last week at the Democratic National Convention in favor of Joe Biden, or at least against Donald Trump, including John Kasich, the governor of Ohio, and Colin Powell, former Secretary of State. Former President George W. Bush is not supporting the president. Senator Mitt Romney is not supporting the president. John Bolton, the former National Security Advisor, is not supporting the president this morning. Jeff Flake, the former senator from Arizona, will not support the president. Governor Phil Scott of Vermont, William McRaven, retired four-star Navy Admiral, Cindy McCain, the widow of John McCain, not supporting the president. Colin Powell, we've already mentioned. Miles Taylor, Christine Whitman, former governor of New Jersey, Meg Whitman, chief executive of Quibi, and the list goes on and on and on. And we have several Republicans in Charlotte this week, Dan Barry, holding a shadow convention, the Convention on Founding Principles. We have the Lincoln Republicans, who are a group of nationally recognized Republicans who are running the best Democratic commercials ever produced, better, much better than what Joe Biden and his people are producing against the president for Joe Biden. All of this is unprecedented, isn't it? What message is this sending to voters, Dan?
The message that it sends is that there is not a litmus test to be a Republican, and that there is intellectual liberty for folks like our friend Bob Orr or Charles Jeter in Mecklenburg County, who are very open. I can say that because they're very open about the fact that they say they're conservatives, but they're not supporting the president. And I take them at their word. Jeter is a good friend of mine. Mm-hmm. I think it provides an opportunity for the party, as well as the Democratic Party, as I mentioned earlier, folks that aren't, you know, tied to the wrist of Joe Biden, to make a decision based on their fundamental beliefs and what they believe is best in their.
Yes, but this is an extraordinary number of people who have made a public statement against the president's reelection. Partisan Republicans. It's extraordinary.
To your point, Mike, and I'm not an apologist, so I think it's extraordinary that they are public. I think that those that
doesn't that tell you something?
As Matt mentioned earlier, we have a president that's a fighter, and as you went through that list, a number of those individuals found themselves at some point over the last 4 or 5 years in the crosshairs of the president.
Yesterday, it was reported that Donald Trump's older sister, a former federal appellate judge, Marianne Trump Berry, was secretly recorded by Mary Trump, who has already written a scathing book about the president. In those recordings, Marianne Trump Berry says the president has, quote, no principles. She decries his tweets, how he changes his explanations of events, his lack of preparation, his lying. These two women are members of his family. How do you explain, Matt, all this dirty laundry if there is nothing there? And what would be your strategy to make sure that doesn't stick?
Well, if you're like me, you know, it's not surprising that family has different political opinions. That's the beauty of America. We're not required to all believe the same thing. Look, I think the president, as he's always done, I mean, there have been distractions throughout the time that he's run for president. Go back to 2015 into 2016, the Billy Bush tapes and these things. He's always done best when he gets back on the horse and focuses on the issues that animate his voters, right? And those are the issues I've talked about some, which is the sort of hollowing out middle class, a fighter for them. And you mentioned, the Republicans who have endorsed Biden. I think the president would probably say, so what? They weren't with me before. And while they're all wonderful people, he certainly probably cast blame on them, for some of the promises not kept over decades.
You brought up the Billy Bush tapes. I mean, that indicates that the man is either immoral or amoral or both. And it also and the lies that his sister refers to, and that I have to say most people in America would agree that he does lie from time to time about key things. Why should America elect a man like that, or certainly re-elect a man like that? What's the defense for that, Matt?
I think they see that the president's heart, that he really does want to fight for the middle class and regular folks and the middle of America and not just the coast. So you'll see more of that sort of contrast in the nominating conventions this week. He'll show the contrast of those cities that have faced anarchy recently with his law and order message. So again, going back to contrast, showing the clear differences between the parties and their visions for the future, that's where the president will find success this week if he sticks to the script.
Ed, I know you want to jump in here. Go ahead.
Mike, I think the president's personality, shortcomings, behaviors were well known before he won the last time. So I feel it's a sad reflection of where we are as a people that someone like that can win. But you have to ask yourself, not why should he win, but why did he? What is going on in America that would cause somebody with those issues to get elected? And I think there is an underlying tension between the progressive movement and the Obama administration era and a whole lot of people who felt left out then that Trump is tapping into. And it really comes down to whether you're more offended by his behaviors are grateful for the fact that he's fighting the fight.
Yes, but his behaviors, Ed, his behaviors undermine most of the institutions that this country was founded on and has run successfully on for over 200 years. I don't care whether you like him. I don't care if you are hurting because you think Obama policies hurt you economically. Is it worth destroying the country? And many people think that's what's going to happen if he's reelected.
Destroying the country started when Bill Clinton did what he did and got impeached for it. I think Hillary Clinton misspoke. I think the importance that the general public attaches to truthfulness, unfortunately, very sadly in my mind, has declined. And I don't think a single person is responsible for that. I think he's profited from it.
So, Ed, Trump has said that if we elect Joe Biden, chaos will be unleashed on America. He has called Biden and the Democrats radicals and leftists, and he has told Americans that Biden will, quote, take away your guns, take away your Second Amendment, no religion, no anything, hurt the Bible, hurt God. He's against God. Is that a credible statement?
I think it's a wild exaggeration, like many of his utterances, but I think that taps into the fact that people have good reason to wonder whether we're going to see more of Bernie Sanders and the squad and a lot of the stuff that the Democrats are so obviously trying to dissociate from during their convention.
The president has also characterized himself as a law and order president and has taken a get tough on crime stance. He's tweeted, quote, Biden will destroy your neighborhood and your American dream, speaking obviously to suburban voters. He's told his efforts to roll back Obamacare problems, programs rather, will cause housing prices to go up and crime to go down. But there is no evidence that housing prices have fallen or that crime has risen. And in fact, only 6% of Americans cited crime as a concern in this election cycle. Matt, 21% named the economy, and another 21% said health care was the concern. Is the president, are Republicans on the right page?
Well, and the polling we do across the state and the region, it does match up with what you're saying. Most concerns about jobs, education, healthcare. If you look at the statements that the White House put out, the president put out last night about the Republican Party platform, he's showing a commitment to healthcare. But again, I think what the president's doing here is sort of micro-targeting his messages, right? There are pockets of people in the polling that we do that show extreme concern about law and order, who show concern about things like safety in schools. I think, as usual, the president's onto something, even if he doesn't use the most eloquent way to describe it. And I think back to the previous discussion about institutions and the president's sort of unconventional way of going about doing business. You know, one of the reasons that Trump was elected is that I think a lot of people lost faith in those institutions because they have not seen them as helping them, right? And that's the story of the Trump era. It's not necessarily Trump doing it, but it's more the tail wagging the dog, which is that I think most people don't see how those institutions have benefited them, but the way that median income in the country has gone down, the loss of jobs in the American Midwest that haven't come back. And so the president will, again, try to focus on those contrasts this week and how his policies will help those people.
A Washington Post ABC News poll taken last month found 64% of Americans saying they don't trust what President Trump says about coronavirus. 46% say they don't trust him at all. More Americans have died in the last 4 months than in any time in the history of the country. 175,651 people died as of yesterday. We have almost 6 million cases in the country, more than any other country in the world on a per capita basis. Businesses are closed. People are struggling. Individuals face personal ruin. Schools are in disarray. Sports and entertainment, which brings billions of dollars into the economy, are pretty much closed or operating minimally. And yet, Dan, the president paints a rosy picture. How does that make sense beyond the base? And when most Americans don't see it that way, and I have 30 seconds.
Thank you, Mike. And I can't answer it in 30 seconds, but to say... to steal a Reagan phrase, there will be mourning again in America, and look at where we came from. And what I mean is the pre-COVID, yes, all levels of government, in my opinion, underestimated the impact COVID was going to have, and we're moving forward. And the story is about moving forward, not about how we got here.
How do you spell mourning?
Same way you do, Mart Alley.
Dan Barry is a former chairman of the Union County GOP, leader of the Hornet's Nest Republican Men's Club. Matt Moore is former chairman of the South Carolina GOP and a managing partner in First Tuesday Strategies. That's a political campaign strategy firm. And Ed Driggs joined us from the convention center, where he is an alternate delegate. Thank you all for the hour. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.